Hello, this is Marshall Poe of the New Books Network. The NBN is run by volunteers, but we do have expenses. If you'd like to support us, please go to any New Books Network website. There you can make a tax-deductible contribution. Just click the Donate to the NBN link and follow the instructions. Alternatively, you can click the Amazon link before you make your Amazon purchases. Since the NBN is a member of the Amazon Affiliates Program, Amazon pays us a small fee for referrals. Whether you can help us out or not, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the following interview.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to New Books in French Studies, discussions with scholars of France and the Francophone world about their new books. I'm your host, Roxane Panchassi. My guest today is Alison Drew, the author of We Are No Longer in France, Communists in Colonial Algeria. And the book was published by Manchester University Press in 2014. Hi there, Alison.
Hi there, Roxane.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. It's a pleasure to be talking to you.
Could you get us started, Alison, by telling our listeners a little bit more about yourself and what got you interested in working on Algeria?
Okay. I'm American-born. I have now dual American-British nationality. I did a PhD at UCLA. I am an Africanist. And I started off, most of my work on Africa has been on South Africa. And that's actually how I began to stop off in Britain and how I ended up teaching in Britain for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I'm now retired, but my interest in French studies began actually with Africa, specifically Algeria. And my interest in Algeria began comparatively having worked on South Africa.
Your original intention for this work, Alison, was to write a comparative study of communism in Algeria and South Africa. So I guess I have a couple of questions along those lines. What would you say makes that comparison make sense as an idea? But what changed your mind about doing the comparative study here?
Well, the two countries, Algeria and South Africa, have many interesting parallels. Firstly, both were settler societies with massive land expropriation. Both had working classes that were rigidly divided along religious, national, or racial lines. And both, unusually for Africa, had socialist movements and communist parties. So those would have been points of departure. Had I proceeded with a comparative book. But then there are also important differences, class structure, that Algeria remained more rural than South Africa throughout the 20th century. Algeria had a traditional Muslim landed elite. South Africa had no black landed elite as a result of the land policies enacted by the white states. So South Africa's class structure was flatter than Algeria's in terms of the indigenous populations. And then they also had important differences. One, Algeria's social cleavages, religion and nationality were reinforcing. Algeria had what I call a clash of two globalizing religions, Islam and Christianity. So religious differences reinforce national differences. There was less space for secularism to develop. And that's different from South Africa, which had cross-cutting cleavages. Christianity subsumed local indigenous religions, and black leaders such as Nelson Mandela were educated in mission schools. And that allowed a common discourse across the color line, more space for secularism than was the case in Algeria. So I would have compared those factors were I doing a comparative study and looking at how the similarities and differences shaped the development of communism in both countries.
So in this book, you decided to focus on Algeria. What moved you away from that initial idea of doing a comparative project?
I felt that there was a great need for a single book examining the development of communism in Algeria during the period of French colonialism. There are very few books on the communist movement in Algeria, and they were all in the French language. Mm-hmm. And I feel that Algerian communism has a very rich experience, and that much can be learned by looking at its history.
So I wanted to ask you about the title of the book, Alison, We Are No Longer in France. Could you say a little bit more about that choice of title and what it means for you, how you think it expresses the content and the arguments of the book?
Well, I think that a paradox of the colonial Algeria was that the French state tolerated democracy in France, but not in Algeria. It was ruthlessly repressive in Algeria. And that repression was recognized by French communists when they traveled to Algeria in the 1920s. Hence, the statement, we are no longer in France, which one of the French communists wrote back to the French Communist Party headquarters in Paris. He was referring to the political conditions, the repression. But the statement implicitly poses the national question. That is, if they were not in France, what country were they in? Hmm. And that actually was the key dilemma which confounded communists in Algeria through these ensuing decades, dealing with the national question.
Mm-hmm. You note, Alison, in the introduction that there is an existing historiography of communism in Algeria, and you pointed out earlier that it's largely in the French language. But could you say more about what the lines of argument have been in that existing literature and scholarship, and what sort of intervention you're making in this book with respect to those conversations?
Well, the main historian of communism in Algeria was Emmanuel Sivan, and he argued that the communists tried to build a small counter-society in their party, but that they were unable to do so, so that ultimately the party ruptured into a European section and then a Muslim Algerian section, in a nutshell. And I didn't think that that was really an accurate way of looking at the problem. For one thing, I don't think he adequately addressed the complexities of the situation in Algeria. Not only the fact that social cleavages reinforced each other, that the climate was not hospitable to secular politics, but also the intense repression. So that was one of the problems that I kept in my head when I was working on this book. Also, our thinking about communism in general has shifted over the last several decades. So I felt that a fresh look at communism in Algeria was very important.
You make the point in the introduction, and then you come back to this elsewhere in the book, that that your project here in this book is to look at communism in Algeria on its own terms. Could you say a little bit more about what that means for you?
Well, not to look at it as a subset of the French Communist Party. I think in that is really what I had in mind when I was mm-hmm. thinking about that. But one has to look at it in the context of Algeria. What were the constraints imposed them, and also imposed on them, and also what did they do? How did they respond to the difficult environment? And as with any small socialist grouping or any non-mass-based politics, there's always a question of trial and error. Mm-hmm. Error, and I think that the communists in Algeria were particularly creative in responding to the constraints. And thus I talk about political space. I think that they were quite creative in trying to expand political space in a context in which they were often hounded and repressed and banned. That's, I think, one of the creative contributions that the communist movement in Algeria has made. How did they deal with political space? How did they try to expand it?
I wonder if we could back up a little bit, and if I could ask sort of a naive question, which is to say, is it fair to say, Alison, that the history of communists in Algeria, you know, the subtitle of the book, is the history of a political party? Is that how you would characterize it? That it is the history of, in the book at least, that it's the history of the Communist Party of Algeria that you're focused on?
I think what I'm trying to say is that communism in Algeria was a movement. Mm-hmm. Now, as a movement, it began, let's say, in 1920, and it was very much imported from France. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the early communist movement was founded as a region of the French Communist Party.
Right.
But the actual Algerian Communist Party was only launched in 1936. Mm-hmm. And it was finally smashed in November 1962. But I feel that rather than focusing solely on a specific organization, one can understand more by looking at communism or socialist currents as a longer-term movement. So that's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to do here. But a movement that is caught between the pressures of the country that it emerges in, but also caught by the pressures of France and the French Communist Party, with which it communism in Algeria had a very close relationship, and also the pressures of the international communist movement, the Comintern, the Cominform, and the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm. You make the point, Allison, that in terms of your response to the existing historiography, one of the things you're trying to rethink or revisit is perhaps a trope or a habit within that historiography of characterizing the story of communism in Algeria in terms of a narrative of failure. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Yes, the narrative of failure, it's easy to fall into that trap, so to speak. I think, because the Communist Party was smashed, and especially from 1962 on, when a one-party state took power, it was not possible to talk about the Communist Party or the role of communism in the anti-colonial struggle. There was a political space to talk about the role of communism simply closed down under the FLN, and also even in France, because there was so much public support amongst progressives for the FLN. Whereas the Communist Party of Algeria was stereotyped as being a European party, which was not at all the case. And they simply often were not there to talk about their history, or they were in prison under the FLN, or they were too traumatized to talk about their history. So I think that one can easily fall into the stereotype of negativity, that the Algerian Communist Party had only a negative history. But I think that's not the case. And that's why I want to, that's why I use the idea of political space. How did they struggle? How did they try to build a movement, whether or not they succeeded, under the very difficult conditions that they faced?
I wonder if you could just comment, Allison, on the quantifiability of adherence to communism, you know, party membership, that kind of thing, so we get a sense of, you know, what percentage of the population are we talking about? Who are we talking about?
Well, I think at its peak, even at its peak, it was tiny. At the moments of lowest ebbs, we're talking about a few hundred mm-hmm. People who were in either the Algerian region of the French Communist Party or in the newly launched Algerian Communist Party. But by the late 1930s, 36, especially 37, there may have been a few thousand members of the Algerian Communist Party, but then that ebbed and flowed.
Sure.
Let's say after the Second World War, immediately in the aftermath of the Second World War, there may have been several thousand, 5,000 members of the Communist Party of Algeria. However, they were disproportionately European at that time for various reasons. But perhaps in the 1950s, before the War of Independence started, I would say maybe, perhaps 10,000 or so members. But by then, I think that the membership was much more Algerian. Mm-hmm. In the late 40s and the early 1950s, more and more Algerian youth began to join the Communist Party, because the nationalist organizations, firstly, were locked into sectarian battles with each other, mm-hmm. political rivalry, and they did not offer space within themselves to debate certain key problems, but also secondly, because the Communist Party allowed the possibility of dealing with what we now call social justice issues, unemployment, poverty, class inequality, things like that. And so that also attracted young Algerians. However, this is still a question of estimation. Mm-hmm. So only a minute proportion of the population were communists.
Right. One of the things that I found most interesting and impressive about the book is sort of how you're managing all of these different vectors, sites and locales, from the local to the international, but also the relationships between, you know, the Communist Party of France, the Communist Party of Algeria, Moscow and the Comintern, thinking about how other powers and sites, the British, South Africans, are looking at what's going on in Algeria. You come at these different sites and vectors by pursuing a number of different types of sources. So I was just wondering, Alison, if you could talk a little bit about all of the different archival materials you draw on in the book, and what some of the new material that you're working with in this book might be.
Well, the obviously secondary literature, secondary articles, many Communist Party publications, and the archival material came from, was mainly located in France, for my purposes, in Aix-en-Provence, in the French overseas archives. Some archival material was in Paris, the French Communist Party archives. Also Moscow, which is a good source for the period of the Comintern, up through the very early 1940s. If you're looking at communist history in different parts of the world, the Comintern archives in Moscow are invaluable. One of the things that moved me the most was prison memoirs. And so I use prison memoirs, the memoirs of communists, when I'm talking about the period of the war of independence.
Well, and you also look at some of the records of the British consulate, is that right? And
yes.
Also of the South
mm-hmm.
African Communist Party records?
Yes, that, yes.
Could you say a little bit more about that?
Well, I think that the British consulate also offered some interesting material, because they of course, based in Algiers, offered a British governmental perspective on communists. Then you have, it's an English language. Most of the other sources were French language. So I thought they were, they gave different points of view. So I'm trying to, here in this book, show how different observers, how different people view things, the different perspectives that they offer. So I liked using the British Consulate Archives for that reason. They were also an interesting counterpart to the French state perspectives, because of the rivalry. Even though the French and the British were obviously at the time, they all had the common hope of maintaining their colonial empires, mm-hmm. but nonetheless they were happy to engage in a bit of rivalry with each other as well. South Africa is an important contrast. So I occasionally used South African newspapers, but more often the communist newspapers, let's say L'Humanité, sometimes mm-hmm. talked about South Africa. So I added some occasional comments about the Communist Party of South Africa as a comparison. You know, how were communists in Algeria looking at the communist world in South Africa?
I wonder if you could say a little bit, Alison, about, you know, the challenge of working with French colonial archives. Does it require a kind of reading against the grain? I mean, how do you use state sources to understand communism, and maybe particularly in the colonial context, and then as you move through the study, particularly within the context of, you know, the Cold War, are those issues that you had to, that were challenges for you doing this research and writing?
Right. Well, I think that in using archives is difficult, particularly if one is under time pressure, for example. But in using archives, you do have to read against the grain. It's not uncommon for states to exaggerate communist influence, for example, and see tiny communist groupings as massive threats. And I think that one can see this at times during the Cold War in Algeria, that even though the Algerian Communist Party had been hounded, it was repressed, it was underground, many of its members had been were killed during the war or they were in prison. But nonetheless, I came across some papers written by, I think, French state officials that suggested that the Algerian Communist Party would have been the opening through which the Soviet Union would have gained influence in Algeria or North Africa. And that is objectively an exaggeration. So one has to bear those mm-hmm. perspectives in mind. But at the same time, when I was looking at the material that they had in the at Aix-en-Provence on the armed wings of the armed wing of the Algerian Communist Party, that is, the Combattants de la Libération, the liberation fighters, what was very interesting was how systematic the French state was, or the colonial authorities were, in putting together what was going on. That is, immediately when arms were stolen by a French communist who was helping the Algerian Communist Party, they were stolen with the idea of using them in the armed struggle. The French colonial authorities sent out letters to all of the little local officials saying, please let us know what's going on with your local communists. They all wrote back and they said, we noticed that so-and-so was absent. He went missing. He's no longer in the town. He went missing 2 months ago. And then another said, so-and-so went on leave from his trade union post. He's no longer in town. And then another one wrote back and said, several new communists have come on the scene in here around Orléansville. The colonial officials were very, very skillful at putting together what was going on. And it is for this, it is exactly for that reason that at one of the important maquis started by the Algerian Communist Party or its armed wing, the Combattants de la Libération, that was around Orléansville. And the state was able to find out where they were through this method of getting their, you know, all the local officials to write in. And they were able to almost predict where they would end up. They knew there were communist clusters around that area. And so that enabled them to sweep in and smash the communist maquis there.
Mm-hmm. In the introduction to the book, Allison, you describe the project as one that examines the efforts of communists in French colonial Algeria to imagine the Algerian nation. And certainly from the introduction on, this idea of the kind of tension between the nationalism, anti-colonialism, and the internationalism of communism, that tension is explored in different ways throughout the book. Could you say a little bit more about how you're dealing with that issue throughout and what some of the conclusions are that you reach?
Yes. The Algerian Communist Party and the young communist movement in Algeria and also the Algerian Communist Party were under a great deal of pressure from the French Communist Party. And I think geopolitics is important here, that the close geographic proximity of Algeria and France, and then the fact that France claimed Algeria as part of France, imposed particular pressures on the Algerian Communist movement. So when World War II was unfolding, the Algerian communists were put under tremendous pressure, and they succumbed to that, to backtrack on the call for independence and to call for the unity of Algeria with France to fight against fascism. So throughout its history, or throughout the history of communism in Algeria, certainly from the 1920s through the late 1940s, the Algerian communists fell under the sway of the French Communist Party, and that impeded their ability to open themselves up to conversations with Algerian nationalists. By the late early 1950s, however, as more and more Algerian youth were joining the Communist Party, I think that that relationship shifted. The pressure of the new Algerian membership, some of whom climbed the hierarchy, became more intense. And the Algerian Communist Party was forced to choose, in a certain sense. And they focused their energy on trying to understand what was the Algerian nation. Now, they eventually came to the view that Algeria was a land that was predominantly Arabo-Berber in composition, but one that was also pluralist. They had the population was pluralist, different religions, overwhelmingly Muslim, but also some Jews, some Christians. So they came to the conclusion that Algeria, while predominantly Arabo-Berber, should also be a pluralist society based on individual rights and tolerance. So over time, I think they broke with the French Communist Party on a number of different issues, especially during the War of Independence. And over time, they then developed their own view of the Algerian nation. They had, well, I quote one passage of a publication of the Algerian Communist Party that had the view of a nation like a river, which is constantly being fed by different tributaries, and that evolves over time. And I think that this is, they had an idea of a fluid nationality.
I want to come back, Allison, to this idea of the interaction between those of European descent and Algerians within the communist movement and the Communist Party of Algeria, and also to come back to your intervention with respect to previous scholarship. You make the point that tension between those populations and the disproportion is part of the narrative of failure that people have insisted upon. What is your intervention with respect to the role of race, ethnicity, and religion in the communist and national politics of Algeria?
I think that obviously there were tensions throughout, but one of the things that struck me was that the Communist Party did try to deal with them. This is the Algerian Communist Party. Mm-hmm. It couldn't avoid dealing with them. The political pressures were so intense. In its early days, it was overwhelmingly European, or people of European descent were in the Algerian region of the French Communist Party. But by the late 40s and early 50s, my sense is that that proportion had changed. And my sense is that the majority of the people were Muslim Algerian, perhaps two-thirds Muslim Algerian, one-third European. There were tensions and pressures, for example, over language. However, some of the European communists who lived in rural areas tended to speak Arabic, and thus the language used reflected the demography of the local areas. And I think here I want to stress the point that you have to look at communism in Algeria in terms of the localities, not simply as the headquarters in Algiers. So in a largely Arabophone area, the main language was Arabic. In the towns, and especially the coastal towns, French remained dominant for a long period of time, Although, if you look at some of the records of their conferences, they also had people intervening and speaking in Arabic, and there was translation. So, so that's one way: the use of language. Sections are using what languages, I think, is an important means of trying to get insight into how the national question inside the party was being addressed. During the war, as the war started, the tensions between Europeans and Algerians broadly across the society became more acute. Racism intensified. And that pressure, of course, was felt within the Algerian Communist Party. And some of the European members left. But that then gave more space to the Algerian members.
So what about the role of state power, Alison? You make the point that the French state's responses to communism in the metropole are different from the state's responses to communism in Algeria. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Overall, the French state was ruthless against communists in Algeria. Now, the French Communist Party itself was subjected to repression at various points in time in the late 1920s, at the start of the Second World War, and so on. However, the communists in Algeria were particularly subjected to repression during the 1920s because of the Rif War, for example. If you look, if you measure imprisonment of communists in Algeria compared to South Africa in the 1920s, in Algeria, communists were put into prison routinely for 2 years. In South Africa, they were put into prison at this period of time for 2 months. So this suggests to me that state repression against a communist in Algeria was particularly acute, both compared to France and also compared to Algeria. And then during the war, the French state archives indicate this, that there was fear. There was a fear because of the Cold War that, and also because of behind the scenes American influence, that there was a fear of nationalist communist alliances. And therefore, the French state seemed to me to be quite ruthless about tracking the communists down. I mean, and also there were lots of articles in the French newspapers about the communist activities, the smashing of certain communist cells and so on and so forth, which actually makes it surprising that that the myth of communist inactivity during the war was able to become prevalent after the war, because Le Monde and the other French newspapers were writing about communist activities, communist cells, the communist maquis, and so forth during the war. So the communists then offered a particular target for the French state. Of course, so did the FLN. I mean, the French state was ruthless against all of them.
You made the point sort of at the beginning of our conversation, Alison, about when talking about the comparison with South Africa, that there was more room for secularism in South Africa. So I guess I want to know sort of more specifically how the book deals with religion and what role religion played within communist activism in Algeria over the course of the period that you cover.
Well, at various points of time, the communists in Algeria did make alliances with various religious movements, the progressive ulama, for example, in the 1930s and the 1940s. Now, to some extent, the Communist Party's willingness to make alliances reflected the broader tensions within the communist world, and especially the pressure of the French Communist Party. But the communists were open to making alliances for much of their history in Algeria with any type of democratic force, any force that was opposed to repression. And one of the key, maybe the key vector of repression in Algeria during this period was the attack on Islam, that the Islamic religion was thoroughly degraded by the French colonial state. And hence, the Algerian Communist Party, especially as more of its members became Algerian, but even aside from that, just in, more generally, they wanted to address this this problem of the attack on the Muslim religion. So they did deal repeatedly through the decades with the problem of religion, and in terms of members and meetings, there was also a tolerance and a flexibility. For instance, at some of the Congress meetings of the Algerian Communist Party, some of the members would stop and perform their prayers, for example. So that was simply tolerated. And one thing that I found quite interesting was in the Tlemcen region, where there were some, there's a history of communists who were very active in that area. And some of the communist men recruited their daughters, and their daughters used to propagandize. But because of there was a strict segregation of the sexes in particular arenas or particular areas of societies, so the women communists worked amongst women, local women. And held meetings with local women, and the men communists worked amongst local men. So they were able to they accepted that this is the reality. They accepted and respected that this was the local custom, but nonetheless they were able to spread to do their work as well as they could as communists by having female communists talk to women and male communists talk to men in the rural areas. I thought it was very creative that they did that.
Mm-hmm. Well, this sort of leads me to another one of my questions that I wanted to ask you, which has to do with the place of gender in your analysis. So you've gotten us started talking about this already, but could you have more to say about how gender plays a role in the book, the different roles that men and women played in the communist movement, in the history that you're exploring here?
Yes. Well, I think that the Algerian Communist Party, like all communist parties, was male-dominated. There's no question about that. I think also that the particular gender politics of Algeria meant that it was more difficult for women, Algerian women, especially Muslim Algerian women, to become engaged in communist politics in particular, but nonetheless, some did. So there's always individual variation. What struck me again is that the women who women communists went out to seek Algerian women and to try to organize them, not necessarily on the mandate of communism, but on social justice issues, and they went to places where women congregated. That might have been marriage ceremonies or different types of female cultural activities. So they sought them out there and organized them there around different issues. They went into the different spaces that people occupied, in other words. So women communists went into women's spaces to talk about the needs of Algerian women, for example. And I thought that was, and it was successful. Also, one woman communist who was very interested in social issues organized women, Baya Alaushish. She organized women who were congregating outside prison gates during the War of Independence. So initially, these women were coming to the prison gates to find out news about what was going on with their family members, mainly men family members, because most of the people in prison, certainly in the early stages, especially were men. But by drawing them together, the the women's demands to see their fathers, their husbands, their sons, became more broader political demands for the human rights of political prisoners. So that's one way that one of the many interesting ways that communists could organize. They went to where people were congregating and organized them on the basis of the conditions that they found.
Another point of comparison you raised at the very beginning of the interview was this idea that Algeria is more rural than South Africa. And I guess I want to ask you about that, the rural context here and its relationship to the urban with respect to the development and history of communism.
Communism has a bias of being urban-oriented. This goes back to, Marx, late 19th century and 20th century communism. So communism tends to see the urban working class as the main, the focal point of any movement for change. Now, in countries like Algeria and also South Africa, because of the divided working class, those divisions, the social divisions between religion, nationality, racial divisions, are so intense that you don't have you can't really think about a united working class that transcends those divisions at these moments and times that we're thinking about. But nonetheless, the communists did in Algeria did organize first and foremost workers in trade unions, both European and Algerian workers. European workers certainly, for the most part, reflected the values of European settlers in Algeria. That is, they were racist and anti-Islam, anti-Algerian. But nonetheless, the communists also were organized in rural areas. Now, the War of Independence began in rural areas. And one thing that I noticed as I was writing this book is that the pressure within the Communist Party of Algeria to engage in armed struggle also came disproportionately from the communists who were in rural areas. They, as one of them pointed out, it was the rural people who felt the brunt of colonial oppression the most intensely. And so it wasn't surprising, perhaps, that the rural, particularly given the repression in towns, that it was in the rural areas that armed struggle began. So in any case, communists did organize in rural areas, and the pressure to join the armed struggle was mainly felt from the rural members. And this was this created a tension precisely because of the urban bias of communism as an ideology. But nonetheless, they did eventually intensity of the guerrilla struggle was such that the communists did join the War of Independence, firstly through their own maquis, then later on merging with the Algerian Liberation Army.
We've talked, Alison, about the contribution that you're making here with respect to different historiographic treatments of the history of communism in Algeria, and I'm just wondering what you would say the book's major contribution or contributions are in terms of illuminating our understanding of, the War of Independence, specifically in the liberation of Algeria.
The main point that I want to make is that the war was pluralist, that there were many different political perspectives that were could be found during the War of Liberation. The myth perpetrated by the FLN, which became the one-party state, is that, in fact, there was unity, one people, one army. But I think that even though there was a broad unity for independence, a broad consensus on independence, there were different points of view about how do you get that unity. What does it mean? And the need to respect and tolerate difference, individual rights, different political perspectives. So I want to make the point that the Algerian Communist Party was there during the War of Liberation, and that the war was pluralist. I also want to make the point that the Algerian Communist Party changed the unidirectional top-down approach of communist policy because of the pressure of the war. Historically, the direction of Communist Party had flowed from Moscow, the Soviet Union, the PCF, the French Communist Party, and then the Algerian Communist Party. But the War of National Liberation transformed the relationship between the French Communist Party and the Algerian Communist Party. And the Algerian Communist Party broke with the French Communist Party on several different issues: support for sabotage, for example, opposition to the Special Powers Bill, desertion from the French Army, the PCA, the Algerian Communist Party supported desertion from the French Army. The French Communist Party did not. And then finally, recognition of the provisional government of the Algerian Republic in late 1958. The Algerian Communist Party recognized the provisional government of the Algerian Republic in November 58. The Soviet Union recognized it in late 1960, and the French Communist Party only recognized it in early 1961. So the PCA did, in this sense, become an autonomous and Algerian Communist Party, breaking from the traditional top-down approach of policy. And flowing from that, another a question that I pose hypothetically is, do communist parties necessarily have to follow the Soviet model? I think one of the interesting things about the Algerian Communist Party is that through the course of their work in the late 40s and the 50s, they developed a dual notion of freedom and also dual notion of rights: freedom from repression, freedom to develop individual rights and collective rights. And I think, therefore, there was hypothetically, and that's only hypothetical, we don't know, the possibility that the Algerian Communist Party did not necessarily have to follow the idea of a one-party state. They opposed, in fact, at independence, they opposed a one-party state. Well, of course, they were a tiny, minute grouping. From a pragmatic point of view, they didn't have a choice. But nonetheless, I think that their history in the late 1940s and in the 1950s and through the war opens up the question, could a communist party have become more democratic? Was there space within the broader field of communism or socialism to follow an independent path that would not be one based on state power over and the suppression of democratic rights? So I pose that question hypothetically.
So what of the watershed of independence then in the book? What does independence do to the communist movement in Algeria?
By the time of independence in July 1962, the Communist Party was virtually smashed. It existed as individuals and grouplets, many of them were in exile. They'd had to flee. Many of them had been in prison as well. But nonetheless, in that period of the few months, July, August, September, October, there was also a certain political fluidity, I argue. There were signs that the minute PCA was gaining influence, because people were looking for answers to questions: what kind of society is Algeria going to be? And the PCA, then the Algerian Communist Party, was eager to engage in such discussions and debates. So I think it was gaining in influence. And the FLN, by contrast, although it had preached unity, by then its divisions were out in the open. It was a struggle for power. And in November 1962, the FLN banned the Algerian Communist Party. And over the next few years, the space in which the communist activists could engage in was progressively clamped down. So I think that a moment of a few months of political fluidity then was closed down.
Mm-hmm.
and it made it virtually impossible for communists and other leftists to organize. And we can see this then, particularly with the coup d'etat in 1965.
You go on in the book, Allison, to explore the legacies of this history, you know, from the interwar years right up through independence, the legacy for post-independence Algeria and for contemporary Algerian society. Could you say a little bit more about what you touch on there and what some of your conclusions are?
The legacy of the Communist Party was one of that respected tolerance and pluralism and also democratic rights. And when we think about communism today, because of the collapse of the Soviet Union, the neoliberal wave that swept the world after the Soviet Union's collapse, communism and socialism more broadly has been painted in a very one-dimensional manner. So I think the legacy of communism in Algeria would be to think about pluralism, to think about tolerance and respect for difference. I think this is the point that I was making. There is then the political rather than the historian's point of view comes across then. The Communist Party of Algeria also had a hope for a vibrant civil society. A vibrant civil society is fundamental for democracy. Democracy is not just a question about formal elections and rotation of political parties, but rather about people getting involved. And so I wanted to stress that point as well when one is thinking about contemporary Algeria or indeed contemporary South Africa, the need for, and not to mention contemporary United States, the need for a vibrant civil society in order to achieve democratic rights and on paper and also make those democratic rights real.
Do you think, Allison, that there might also be lessons for the contemporary French left now, is what I mean by contemporary, with respect to learning from the Communist Party of Algeria at particular moments, how the Communist Party of Algeria attempted to create and expand political space, as you mentioned earlier in our conversation, and also some of the strategies with respect to inclusiveness, religion, gender, any of these kinds of things? Do you think that there might be lessons for France's left today, and particularly the Communist Party?
Well, I think it would be important for the French left and also the French Communist Party to think about this tiny little Algerian Communist Party and to look at the type of activities it engaged in, its strengths and weaknesses, because obviously the Algerian communists made many mistakes over time, and they were unduly influenced at various moments by the French Communist Party, although perhaps they had no choice, one might argue. But I think that just to recognize that the Algerian Communist Party was not simply blindly following the French Communist Party, that they worked under extremely difficult conditions and that they were fully involved as far as humanly possible in the War of Independence, I think that would be a big step forward for the French left when looking at its own history.
Mm-hmm. Well, Allison, I've taken up a lot of your time, so I just have one last question for you, which is, what are you working on now?
Okay, well, I'm very interested I'm still interested in thinking about socialism, but also I'm interested in the position of women in socialist organizations and movements. They are in the 20th century, for example, women in socialist and communist organizations were a minority. I want to understand their experiences. How did they cope? And thus, I'm thinking of doing this through a biographical perspective. I'm not quite sure what woman I would focus on, whether it would be an Algerian communist or a South African communist, for example, I'm just at very early exploratory stages. But I like biography, and I want to focus on the issue of gender in socialist organizations. Mm-hmm. So I thought that would be one way that I could contribute to that question.
Well, I hope you'll keep me posted if it turns out that you choose to work on an Algerian woman or to do a comparative between an Algerian woman and a South African woman. Allison, I just want to thank you so much for joining me and for writing the book.
Well, thank you so much, Roxanne. It's been a very interesting discussion.